Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. Mitt Romney was one of the most prominent never-Trump Republicans of the 2016 campaign. In March of that year, he delivered a speech pleading with his party not to nominate the billionaire. Here's how he described Trump's personal qualities.
The bullying, the greed, the showing off, the misogyny, the absurd third-grade theatrics.
So, will Romney continue to be critical of the president now that he's headed to the U.S. Senate? To answer that, we turn to Eric Fernstrom. Fernstrom was Romney's communications director during his successful 2002 campaign for governor of Massachusetts. He also served as a top aide and strategist for Romney in both the 2012 and 2008 presidential campaigns. And he joins us now. Eric, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with sort of a real basic question about your former candidate in Mitt Romney. He's been waiting a long time to be in the Senate. Of course, he's had some races in between, but 1994 was the first time around. Now in 2018, he's going to get his shot. What kind of senator do you expect Mitt Romney to be?
Well, you know, Mitt's an interesting political figure. He's got roots in three states. He was born in Michigan. He ran the Olympics in Utah. And, of course, he raised his family and he started a business in Massachusetts. And when he started his political career, he chose the hardest place of all to run and win as a Republican, and that's right here in Massachusetts. So now he's found success in the easiest place for him to run and win as a Republican, as the next senator from Utah. I think he's going to be a great addition to the Senate. You know, we're familiar with his leadership here in Massachusetts. He is a statesmanlike leader. He's gracious. He's courteous. He's bipartisan. I think we're going to need more people like him in politics.
You mentioned that it's an easy state. It's obviously a very red state, but it's also not really Trump country. I mean, he did win it in the general, but in the primary, Utah voters didn't really embrace Donald Trump, and Mitt Romney didn't either during the campaign. I want to remind listeners of something that Mitt Romney said when he was delivering a speech during the 2016 campaign, when he was extremely critical of Donald Trump.
Here's what I know. Donald Trump is a phony, a fraud. His promises are as worthless as a degree from Trump University.
But as you recall, Eric, after that, when Donald Trump was elected, Mitt Romney was a candidate for Secretary of State and seemed to be on friendlier terms with the president. So what should we expect? I mean, will we see a very critical Mitt Romney in the Senate, or will he be warmer to President Trump?
Well, I think Mitt Romney has demonstrated that he'll support Trump when he thinks he's right, and he's going to oppose him when he's wrong. He agrees broadly with Trump on things like tax policy and deregulation, but he's obviously uncomfortable with some of the things that Trump says and how he says them, and he's pointed that out. Yesterday, he was one of the first members of the Senate. Of course, he's senator-elect at this stage, to express some concern about the abrupt dismissal or resignation of Jeff Sessions as Attorney General and what that means for the Mueller investigation. And he wants to protect the integrity of that investigation so it can conclude unimpeded. So, you know, I think as a senator, his first priority will be making progress for the state of Utah and the nation, and that's going to guide his actions. But those who want him to be a constant thorn in the president's side, I think, are going to be disappointed. He's going to be his own person. He'll speak up when he needs to, and he'll support the president when he thinks he's doing the right thing.
Eric, in the past, the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said that legislation to protect the Mueller investigation that you mentioned a moment ago is unnecessary. He doesn't see any indication that the president would actually move to end that investigation. I'm curious whether you anticipate that, beyond supporting the continuation of the investigation, whether future Senator Romney might actually push McConnell to pass such legislation to protect that investigation.
Well, I actually think the next shoe to fall in this Mueller investigation will be a report from the special prosecutor himself outlining his findings and any remaining indictments that may issue as a result of that. In an ironic sort of way, I think Jeff Sessions being shown the door is actually inviting more congressional scrutiny of what's happening in the Justice Department. particularly with respect to the Mueller investigation. And I find it very hard to believe that any new appointee of the president's is going to be confirmed without some kind of guarantee that the Mueller investigation will be allowed to proceed and come to its natural end.
Just before the Sessions' resignation yesterday, the president had a rather combative news conference with journalists. And, Eric, I'd love to get your take on that because you've kind of been on both sides. You're a former reporter. I think you spent a decade at the Boston Herald here, right? And but you've also been a media strategist for political candidates. And I think it's hard to deny that the president's anti-media posture has been effective for him in a lot of ways. So how do you view that exchange?
Well, I thought the whole press conference was classic Trump. There were hostile exchanges with reporters. The president was threatening his political opponents. He was shaming Republicans who ran and lost for not embracing him more fully. But this is what we've come to expect of our president. I know that's sad in a way. I think Trump has a way of bringing out the worst in people. And you could almost predict how that press conference was going to go once Trump moved off his prepared remarks and started taking questions and answering them extemporaneously. Why, for instance, would he even call on Jim Acosta, given the bad relationship that exists between the two? I think it's because he actually enjoys the back and forth, the hostility of the exchange. I think in some way he derives energy from that. But what happened yesterday at the White House will delight his supporters. It horrifies his detractors. But I think long-term what it does is damaging to the health of our policymaking generally, because now I think people are becoming accustomed to looking to Washington for their entertainment and not for serious policymaking. And I think that has major ramifications for us as a country going forward.
If Eric Trump brings out the worst in the press, what does he bring out among fellow Republicans? How do you see the party right now? I mean, is it fully the party of Donald Trump, or is it not quite that far? I mean, I'm thinking, for example, we just saw Charlie Baker win re-election here in Massachusetts as a decidedly different type of Republican. So what is the state of the GOP right now in your view?
Well, let's talk about the midterm election of a couple of days ago. You know, I think Democrats were hoping for a wave. It wasn't a wave, but they did recapture the House, and that's a significant achievement. But there was much more of a mixed result because they didn't get the Senate. In fact, the Republicans increased their majority in the Senate. And I think of those senators who, Republican senators who are newly elected, I think they really owe their success to the president coming into their states, campaigning for them. So they're going to be more Trumpier. And even in the House, although the Republican conference there is smaller now, I think that, too, is more Trumpier. So Donald Trump owns the Republican Party, lock, stock, and barrel. And you can even say that his support, not only among Republicans, but among voters of all types, is flourishing in some parts of the country. And I think that's much to the dismay of the party's never-Trumpers and, of course, for Democrats who are hoping through this midterm election to drive a stake through the heart of the president, and that just did not happen.
Eric, do you see a lane in 2020 for a different kind of Republican to challenge the president? Perhaps not for the party's nomination. It's hard to imagine that. But maybe as an independent, I'm thinking of a Michael Bloomberg or a Jeff Flake or even, you know, a certain future senator from Utah, perhaps.
No, I don't see anybody successfully taking on Trump in a primary challenge for president in 2020. You know, both parties are undergoing transformations. I think the Republican Party is further along than the Democrats in the sense that they've moved away from the center and they've become much more conservative with Trump as their champion. The Democrats are catching up, though. They, too, are moving further and further out to the left. So what does that mean? I think it means two things. Number one, it's likely that the Democrats are going to choose as their next nominee someone who is more ideological, younger, possibly a minority. This would resemble the changes that are taking place in the party nationally. for the Republicans and the Democrats as a whole. I think it also could possibly open the door to a viable third party that is centrist and more moderate in its politics. But anybody who thinks that Trump is somehow vulnerable to an intra-party challenge, I think, is underestimating the hold he currently has on the party.
Do you think Mitt Romney has any appetite for another White House bid, or is he done with this?
I think Mitt is entirely focused on being the next senator from Utah and putting together his team and settling into his new office.
Although it seems that 70 is the new 40 or 50 in these presidential races, so I guess maybe we'll never know. I was following, Eric, your commentary on election night on Tuesday on Twitter, and I took interest in some of what you said about Elizabeth Warren's win here in Massachusetts. Yes, she did handily defeat Jeff Deal, 60% to 36%, but you've also said that the results might give Democrats some concern about her national prospects in 2020. What do you mean by that?
Well, Elizabeth Warren won, and that's good enough for another term in the Senate, but I think she underperformed here in Massachusetts. For instance, the Republican governor, Charlie Baker, got more votes than she did right here in a deep blue state. And I think what that signals is that she's not a dominating political force in her own backyard. So in the wake of the midterms, what are people talking about with respect to 2020? It's not Elizabeth Warren. It's a person like Beto O'Rourke in Texas, who, even though he lost his Senate race there against Ted Cruz, the reason he's generating his excitement is because he's young, he's dynamic, there's a newness about him, and he can run competitively in a state where Democrats are not expected to do well. I don't think anybody believes Warren could have performed the way Beto O'Rourke did in that Texas race against Ted Cruz, and I think they have some serious concerns about whether she could do as well in some must-win states for the Democrats like Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. So there's an invisible primary that takes place, sort of a beauty contest. And one of the factors that people will look at is how you performed in your most recent election. And yes, she did win. And as I said, that's good enough for her reelection. But she didn't do as well as the Republican governor in a deep blue state. And I think that could be a sticking point for her going forward.
Yeah, the Republican governor, Charlie Baker, obviously fared very well, even as the Senate race kind of became an issue in that gubernatorial race. I'm thinking back to that debate on WGBH between Baker and his Democratic challenger, Jay Gonzalez, when Gonzalez tried to make Baker's support for the GOP ticket up and down the ticket a big issue and said, you should not be voting for this guy because he's endorsing Jeff Deal. Let's just take a listen to what he said at the time.
Governor, are you going to vote for Jeff Deal?
Governor?
I'm going to vote for me, and I'm going to vote for Karen Pulido, and I'm going to vote for a series of other candidates as well. I don't know what I'm going to do yet with respect to that one.
You don't know if you're going to vote for the guy you endorsed?
I haven't made a decision.
I should say that after that, Governor Baker sort of amended his statements, that he had misspoke, that he was going to support the ticket. But he certainly didn't really embrace Jeff Deal. And I know, Eric, you said earlier that Donald Trump owns the national GOP lock, stock and barrel. But that doesn't seem to be the case here in Massachusetts. It seems like the Baker version of Republicanism trumps the Deal version of Republicanism. Is that your assessment at this point as well?
No, it's not. I believe Trump does own the Massachusetts Republican Party. I also believe that Charlie Baker was fortunate in that he did not draw a serious Trump-like candidate.
Eric, couldn't you say, though, that the governor did draw a Trump-like challenger in the primary? I mean, Scott Lively styled himself as very much a Trump Republican, and Baker trounced him.
Yeah, well, Scott Lively was not the ideal opponent for Baker in that primary because he had virtually no name recognition and he had no money to go out and buy it. I think a much more serious challenger, and people scoff at him, would have been somebody like Curt Schilling, who has 100% name recognition and is closely identified with the president on a lot of issues. That would have posed a real problem for Baker, but fortunately he did not have to face that, and he won his primary and won his general election.
What about Deal? Is he a serious contender in Massachusetts politics in future elections?
Well, I think Deal's mistake was in not distancing himself from Trump. In some ways, I think a stronger candidate for that Senate seat would have been someone like Beth Lindstrom or even John Kingston, who were not shy about criticizing Trump when he deserved it. That type of candidate would have fared much better in a general election here in Massachusetts. But the paradox of our politics is that they could not get out of our Republican primary. That's why I'm telling you that even here in Massachusetts, where we sort of have always taken note of the fact that the Republican Party is more liberal or more moderate than the party nationally, even here, Trump really does have a lock on Republican primary politics.
Well, Eric, we really appreciate your insights into politics more broadly and Mitt Romney specifically. That is Eric Fernstrom, founder and a principal of the Shamit Group. He's a political consultant and a former longtime top aide to Mitt Romney. Eric, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Stay with us. Coming up, countertenor Anthony Roth Costanzo on his mission to make opera great again. I'm Callum Borchers. This is Radio Boston.